with hundreds of doors across Houston, you can get expert care everywhere.
That's the difference between practicing medicine and leading it. Houston Methodist, leading medicine.
This is Pretty Much Pop, a culture podcast, wrapping up our fourth season, aka our fifth year. And so it's time once again to turn our eyes away from the media upon our own navels. This is Mark Linsenmeyer, nostalgic for the days for last year when we did an episode like this.
This is Al Baker, still preferring the previous presenters to the newfangled ones we got now.
Sarah Lynn Breck, and I have nothing clever to say today because I've gotten almost zero sleep. You know what? I am nostalgic for the days when I could sleep through the night without my dog interrupting us.
This is Lawrence Ware coming to you from Oklahoma City, Oklahoma, and I am surrounded by Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle Funko Pops, but I don't look back to those days fondly. I keep them there to torture me.
So yes, if it was not obvious from our introductions, the theme of today was perhaps at least an issue that is, yes, part of it is in terms of a programming issue. We've been thinking about whether we should continue to focus on just new things or whether we should like have a Godfather episode, just some classic thing. Although
how do you say nostalgia? I don't trust you, Al, your British isms.
Nostalgia.
You don't know how to say words. You don't know how to say words properly, Al. I need an American.
He says I'm the most proper.
Nostalgio.
It's from the Latin nostalgo.
Oh, here is, we go with Mark. Look at the big
all the way
brain
back
Mark.
to the Greek nostrum dalgo, which is I'm making this up.
I know you are.
Yes, so we're trying to figure out. We haven't had any trouble really trying to work something classic into the current lineup because it's just always seems like there's something happening related to an old property. So there's an anniversary, there's a new version of it. Nostalgia is just so through the entire entertainment landscape that one of our sister podcasts, I would say, we've had both their hosts on multiple times here, remakes, reboots, and revivals. They can cover virtually everything that is in pop culture. Opening thoughts.
If the question here is like whether we should embrace nostalgia or whether we should attempt to stay current, is the first thing that you said basically that all we can do at most is make a shallow pretense of trying to stay current because we inevitably end up talking about the old stuff anyway.
Or it's the latest work of this filmmaker, or we don't know if it's a big enough deal. I mean, I guess I can't think offhand. Has there been something in the last year that's come along that is a completely new thing, a new movie, a new show, but that we can't actually cast it in terms of, oh, this is the latest in stuff by members of SCTV or what? That's not a good example, but it has a director. It has some sort of lineage to the past that we can talk about it in some broader context. And that's been good for us, frankly, because we don't necessarily have the juice to talk about one movie for the whole thing. And it's more fun to talk about its relationship to its genre or its creators and the past stuff they've done, etc.
As far as like, you know, if you think back to like, what are some of the biggest hits of the last year or two, you know, you think of like Barbie and Oppenheimer or Succession. Oppenheimer is a biopic, basically. And Barbie, I would say, plays to nostalgia factor for sure. Even though these are things that are considered new, but Barbie is based on IP, but still, it's still considered that was something that wasn't based on like another Marvel movie or, you know, another Inside Out or something like that. It wasn't, you know, a sequel to anything. It was considered new, but it was still sort of playing off of nostalgia.
But Succession's a great example. Yeah.
That Barbie movie was about it. Listen, I grew up in the time when I was in college, I was working at Blockbuster Video. And at Blockbuster Video, every single Friday and Saturday, little girls would come into my shop. And do you know what they were renting? Would you like for me to tell you what they were renting? They were renting one, Mary-Kate and Olsen movies. Those were hot. it's the early 2000s. Two, Barbie. They had a ton of Barbie movies. they had Barbie does this, Barbie goes here, Barbie does this. And then there was the Barbie Dreamland, Homeland.
I don't know.
The Barbie Homeland Barbie Security Homeland. Playset.
Whatever, right? And so
Barbie Airport Security Cavity Claire Searching. Danes
is Homeland Barbie.
What we got was a fresh take on Barbie. To be sure, Barbie was not new. It was never new. Barbie was huge. It was absolutely huge. So I protest that Barbie was a new thing. It was not. It was a fresh take on it, but it was not new at all. Like, when I watched Barbie, I think I said this to y'all a year ago. When we watched Barbie, there was a pink Cadillac there. There was a pink Camaro camera. I can't talk today. There was pink cars all over the place. How'd they know that Barbie was a thing?
Of course. But I mean, when you're thinking about what are the things that have resonated with culture.
But it was all nostalgia. It was all nostalgia. Like,
a lot of it has been nostalgia. Not all of it, but some of it for sure.
We're just maybe not cool enough to know about. I've never actually watched a Skibidi Toilet video, even though I hear
I have.
It's one of those things. And it isn't aimed at 3-year-olds anyway, so it's perhaps not our jam.
That is maybe an interesting point. We're focused on this podcast on movies and TV, and we've done like an album. But what is now old media? So is it maybe not surprising that so much of what we do ends up being, if not directly nostalgia, then like a legacy property? Because the target audience is old farts like us who still watch TV instead of just TikToks.
I think that's exactly right. I was thinking the same thing. I mean, Gen Z isn't going out and seeing movies in the same numbers as Gen X and millennials. And it seems like that's who movies and a lot of TV shows these days are aimed toward. I mean, even what was the, we watched a TV show based on a video game. What was that video game called again?
Fallout.
That was nostalgia. That was something, they did it a really good job of it, but it was still, we were that core audience, or actually certainly you three were that core audience.
I thought you liked it.
I loved it, but I didn't play the game. It wasn't nostalgic for me. It was brand new for me.
In 2003, a lot of editors were hitting up folks like myself, people who write for Slate, New York Times, or whatever. And they were hitting us up and they were saying, do you have any takes on nostalgia? Now, the reason why was because what we were seeing in 2003, if you do a
2023.
23. Sorry.
I was just thinking how impressive your memory was. You were like, I remember.
Back in 2003, I promise you, I was not writing for these places. I was writing my term papers. But no. So in 2023, they were asking us to write about nostalgia because what they were noticing was that everything that was hitting was nostalgic, right? Everything that was actually making money in the movie theaters, things that were actually popular on television, were in some way tied to nostalgia. And it was a big talking point at that time. It's kind of died down, but it's still true that the reason why they're kind of aiming at nostalgia was because us old farts, people like Sarah and Al and Mark and maybe me, we have the money, right? We're the people who are willing to go to the movie and pay the money for that. We're the people who are willing to subscribe to these things. The younger generation, they don't have that kind of disposable income yet. And if they do, they're not spending it on those kinds of things. And so that's the reason why they've tilted things in that way. Now, as God forbid, we begin to die off, I do wonder what things will look like, how things will change. The older people are going to go and watch that Top Gun movie, right? Maybe the kids will go, but the old people will go. The older people, like Mark, we'll go watch Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, although he might be too old for that.
I am actually, but I've been thinking that I've been missing out. To refocus for the new season, we're going to get a new panelist. We're going to replace Al with Lil Al, a little British child. Hello.
What?
I didn't prepare a voice. And hold on.
I'm going to be very mad. Okay.
Hello, I'm the new little child to come on. I'll work on it. We'll get a new five-year-old Oliver. It's Oliver is what I'm looking for.
You're looking for.
You want Oliver. And you want Oliver for the youth perspective?
Yes.
Is that behind the bit? Right.
I want someone who is, you know, actually has the real Cockney, the real orphan we really got to stretch the demographic. Really, someone, if we have a time machine of some sort. Actually, Al, if you could just bring your small self, I would be satisfied with that.
Oh,
just use the time machine. Sorry. You got to screw up your present life. You're going to have to go back. You're going to have to bring you. What would be the ideal age? When were you your most loquacious and obnoxious? Maybe 9?
Oh, probably 13.
Yeah, something around that. So there's a couple of different points. I think I was probably best read at like 11.
Oh, okay. 11 or 12. All right.
I feel like I was cleverest then, and it all went downhill after that.
It's still a very awkward time. That'd be good to experience.
I feel very uncomfortable at the turn this conversation is taking.
All right. What about 11-year-old Sarah?
Oh, yeah. No.
But that's an interesting question. No one needs that. What was I actually, I was like thinking about nostalgia, like what was I actually interested in when I was a child? Because it was probably weird. I think when I was 13, I was just reading a lot of Sherlock Holmes stories because I was that kind of white kid. But what?
Is that a British thing?
Maybe. I think it's a precocious child thing more than anything else.
That's probably right.
So you're trying to say I wasn't precocious because I didn't read Sherlock Holmes at 11? That's fine.
There's many ways to get that right.
Absolutely. How many art house movies were you watching when you were 11?
Quite a few, actually.
How many?
Quite a few.
How much of your horror when you were... So we're now the tween versions of all of us are making their phantom appearances. You don't have to do a voice, but yeah, Lawrence, were you like already into consuming the... I would think the horror movies, like that's actually the prime age to get into that stuff.
I was watching way too many horror movies at like 10, 11, 9, like Friday the 13th. I didn't remember the boobs.
Oh my God, that's so loud.
But I was too young for that. But Nightmare on Elm Street, Halloween, I was all in when I was younger, man. Like this tolerance for horror movies has been built up over decades, man. I'm here now.
You're hardened.
At that age, it was definitely horror movies, but more than that, it was absolutely Marvel, man. Like it was X-Men, it was Marvel comic books. I was deep into that. Didn't get to DC until I was older, but definitely Marvel and horror movies. That was my whole life. And football. I was a pretty good football player.
Sarah, were you working your way through VC Andrews or whatnot? Or what were you doing?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, I was reading a lot of Boxcar Children, about the Boxcar Children.
Ooh, yeah, I love those.
Everything. Oh my God, I was obsessed. In fact, I was so obsessed. I don't know if I've talked about this on this podcast, but I took out those books from the library so often that the librarian had to pull me aside and tell me to pick out some other things so that other kids could have a chance at the Boxcar Children.
That story's supposed to go the other way around. It's supposed to be like at the beginning of Beauty and the Beast, where the librarian says to you, you like these books so much, why don't you keep them? But no, yeah. It's like, would you stop?
No, yeah, it was. Yeah.
Would you stop being so passionate, please?
Expand your goddamn horizons, please.
No, it's true. Yeah, I read a lot. But I was thinking about my favorite movies at the time. I mean, we talked about Indiana Jones last year, and that was also, even when it came out, was nostalgic. You know, it was like, I don't think that we've ever not been nostalgic for earlier times. But yeah, anything Steven Spielberg, anything that he directed, I was watching.
Thinking again, like the stuff I liked at exactly that age, what I was discovering, and again, probably because like the people whose opinion I respected most were my parents and my grandparents. So I was into, like, I read a lot of Sherlock Holmes. I started getting into Tolkien and like Douglas Adams.
Oh, yeah.
Because my granddad in particular read them. And I was like, well, clearly this is what cool and respectable men of the world enjoy. So this is what I, age 11, am going to learn to enjoy too. But it's interesting how nostalgia works in that case, because Sherlock Holmes doesn't generate a feeling of nostalgia for me. It doesn't remind me of being a child other than that I like remember reading it. And it would be weird for Sherlock Holmes to make me nostalgic for the mid-90s, because that's not the period that it's supposed to elicit nostalgia for. But that's what I was into in the mid-90s. But stuff does make me nostalgic. Like Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, even though I watched that in the early 2000s, makes me nostalgic for the early 90s when I was doing entirely different things.
Right.
It's interesting how like nostalgia doesn't, it's not always about remembering your youth, I guess.
I mean, Happy Days, which was a nostalgic show from this era that I was watching like crazy in sixth grade or whatever, but it was a completely 50s nostalgia show. And after a certain point, like I don't distinguish that. Like historically, they're not actually that far apart. So that my nostalgia for the 80s is basically, yeah, sure. That's when people were into the 60s. Like,
but that's also, I mean, if you think of it from like a marketing perspective, that is a show that you could have watched with your parents and you both would have enjoyed it. And I think that a lot of that, the reason why Barbie was such a huge hit was the nostalgia factor, but also, you know, multiple generations were going to see this and could get something out of it in a large part because of nostalgia.
I guess there's remembering your own childhood, but then there's also this idolizing, or maybe it's more the generation before yours that you're like, oh gosh, the music was so great in the 60s. Like, I wasn't around to see how much absolute junk was coming out on a daily basis. It was in the top. It's only the stuff that has like gotten to me. And I was brought to mind this Woody Allen film, Midnight in Paris. Have you guys seen that?
Owen Wilson?
Yes, where he sort of goes back in time because he really admires the 1920s Paris generation of authors and wants to be there. And then it turns out somebody who hooks up with their just wants to go back to the Paris golden age or whatever. This is just an absolutely normal thing of thinking that every pastime or some particular pastime in the recent past, I don't know if there's a specific number of years or whether this is going to completely change now that we have media that can, you could just spend all day right now watching shows from 1994 if you want it.
But is it always about a good feeling that you have from that time? I mean, growing up in the 80s, wasn't necessarily 100% fun times for me, but I listened to, you know, an 80s Madonna song and I'm absolutely transported back to a seventh grade dance. And believe me, seventh grade dances, as much fun as they may have been, they were also completely emotionally fraught. I mean, and I remember that too. It's not like I want to go back to that time, but that's what it makes me think of, often fondly.
Yeah, it seems like nostalgia is necessarily like fond, at least. It doesn't feel like it makes sense to talk about being nostalgic for, unless you're a very particular kind of person. I'm nostalgic for the racial segregation of the 1950s. Doesn't feel like something that the regular people should say.
All right, there's say. A clip, the Al clip that I'm going to post.
Yeah.
The good old days, right?
So it feels like if you're talking about nostalgia for something, you are talking about taking a rose-tinted view of it. Something like Stranger Things, like in 30 years, if people get nostalgia for Stranger Things, are they going to be nostalgic for the 2010s and 20s, or are they going to be nostalgic for the 80s?
All of it.
I think that's a great question.
That's exactly parallel to the Happy Days thing.
That was, we watched that with, you know, our kids.
And I'm just trying to think, was there any time in Happy Days where they were just all like, oh, the 40s. Remember the 40s? You're like, I don't think so. I think they would have lost their audience. Thanks for listening to Pretty Much Pop. I want to point out at this, the only ad break in this episode, that were you to provide support for this podcast through patreon.com/prettymuchpop, you would not only never have to hear any advertisements again, but you would get the full after talks for every single episode. So if you like hanging around with this group of people, why would you not want to hang around them for another 15, 20, 25 minutes? We get to touch on little topics that aren't a big enough deal for us to do a whole episode on. You get to find out what we're covering in future episodes so you can get prepared and watch or listen to those things. And I also want to point out that starting a few episodes ago, the episode MP3s for the supporter versions are actually a higher quality. The files can be larger because Patreon gives us unlimited space to host them. So your listening experience is literally better. Now, all Patreon supporters can listen to our ad-free feed through the Spotify application. They have an exclusive deal with Patreon. And if you're an Apple Podcast user, it's actually super easy to become a supporter. You just click that little subscribe button and it'll start charging you $5 a month, which will actually get you access to the supporter versions, not only of this podcast, but also to my Nakedly Examined Music and Philosophy versus Improv podcasts. So for all subscribers to those two podcasts, that same membership will upgrade you. So you won't be hearing ads on those. You'll hear whatever bonus content I have across all three podcasts without your having to take even a second to configure anything. All right, let's get to the ads. It's better
over here. After investing billions to light up our network, T-Mobile is America's largest 5G network. Plus, right now, you can switch, keep your phone, and we'll pay it off up to $800. See how you can save on every plan versus Verizon and AT&T at T-Mobile.com/AcrossAmerica.
Up to 4 lines via virtual prepaid card. Allow 15 days. Qualifying unlocked device, credit, service, ported 90 plus days with device and eligible carrier and timely redemption required. Card has no cash access and expires in 6 months.
But, you know, I'm thinking about this from a Black perspective. I can't think of a single show or a movie that is nostalgic for the past from like the 80s and 90s. Now, there are things that are nostalgic for like the 80s now. That's like the rise of hip hop, and hip hop has changed so much. And so things are different now. But I genuinely can't think of like the Jeffersons were like, oh, man, it was great 20 years ago. Or Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. Oh, man, it was great when we were fighting to get in his house. Like, I wonder if that's a white thing. Like, I'm being genuinely honest. I wonder if that is something that functions, because the great classic joke, Black people can be fucking with the time machine. And the reason why is because, you know, you get a time machine, you go back, you mess around being enslaved. You know, you can't be messing with the time machine. No. And so
that's a really good question.
There are definitely points where, because nostalgia necessarily involves a rose-tinted view, there are periods in history where you just can't.
You can't think about people like, oh man, it was great when we're getting our asses kicked. Well, maybe not Birmingham.
For the wider culture, but certainly for like your childhood and your what a simpler time pre-technology.
Perhaps.
And I'm thinking of like the Sisko on Deep Space Nine, right? The Black main character. And he would go back and he would visit his dad on Earth, and his dad had a restaurant that was like this old world flavor. Now, of course,
we're talking
about a supposed future reflecting back to what would still be the future compared to when it was made. But seems like his dad in that was supposed to be kind of anti-technology and like,
I think you're right. I think
down home. Here's some grits, you know, whatever he was serving at his New Orleans restaurants or.
Here's some grits.
He's like the equivalent of a dairy farmer today who insists on hand churning his butter. Yeah. Right. That's the kind of nostalgia that the Siskos are doing.
We used to, actually, Lawrence, I think that's such a good point. I think that there is nostalgia for certain things of the past, but there are fewer examples there at the ready. And when they're taken away, so like with Bill Cosby, The Cosby Show is such a touchstone, and we used to talk about that show in using nostalgic language around that show. And now we can't do that anymore. That's been taken away from us. And I feel like if you're a person of color, or if you're a woman or something, or differently abled or something, you have far fewer examples to get nostalgia about than the overall white culture.
I was brought to mind of, I probably brought this up before, but the Portlandia sketch, the song of the dream of the 90s is alive in Portland.
Yeah.
And then they did it on a later episode and ended up being the dream of the 1890s, because so many of the things, giant weird beards and butter churning and stuff, were like things that bougie rich people, you know, were doing in Portland now, usually.
Yeah, it's good. But it's also, again, like very white too. It's like, that's Portland for you.
Yeah, achingly white.
But I think that's part of the subject of what is being mocked is the, like, I guess these things are cyclical, so that, you know, hippies were, even in the 80s, like a thing of nostalgic making fun of. But now what are these 90s people doing, these 1890s? They're hippies. They're just, it's a different, some of the same fashions even. So I think, again, we're going to be blurring what exactly we're nostalgic for when there are too many echoes of the same. Oh, it's not the actual 90s that you're actually nostalgic for the 60s. It was that people were ripping off the 60s when they were, you know, grunge is basically just ripped off 70s music. That's how we felt when it was occurring.
Here's a question. We talked earlier about how we're all really old and what culture means to us is like TV and movies and so on.
For the record, I am not old. I disagree with that.
You're older than me, Lawrence, and I'm self-describing as old.
Wait a minute, how old are you, Al? How old are you, Al? How old are you?
He's the youngest.
Yeah, I'm the baby. I'm 38. Don't let the beard fool you. None of us are young. The kind of nostalgia that we've all been talking about and that we all feel whenever we feel it is for times before the internet, or at least before like the modern internet.
Agreed.
And one of the things that the modern internet has done is made the kinds of, like, I won't say monoculture, but the kinds of monolithic cultures that we grew up in kind of impossible.
Hmm.
One question I have is, does the nostalgia cycle, I mean, the nostalgia cycle is in, we're going to keep being nostalgic for different periods in history. That's going to keep happening. But does the nostalgia cycle kind of have to end here, in that there isn't enough of a shared experience these days. There isn't enough of a shared cultural experience to make the kind of nostalgia that we have for the 70s, 80s, 90s, and even early 2000s kind of possible anymore. What are the two or three shared childhood experiences that in 20 years filmmakers are going to be able to reference and know that every young adult in the audience is going to go, yeah, I remember that?
Taylor goddamn Swift. I mean, there are some things.
Taylor Swift.
I mean, honestly, Taylor Swift, Marvel, especially Marvel.
Marvel.
Before the weirdness. Fortnite will absolutely be a thing that people are going to be, oh, do you remember playing Fortnite? Oh, man, I used to play with my friends. And those three come to mind.
Right. It's still, sure, it's a niche.
Drake and Kendrick Lamar, that this beef that just happened, this will be it. You guys are laughing. I am so serious.
Minecraft.
Yeah, it's
we're going to talk about
Minecraft
and yeah. Fortnite. But a lot of it is gaming centered. Mm-hmm. I think our politics these days, you know, I Trump. Think that people are
going to. Oh, yeah.
I can't, man, you remember Trump was out here being racist? I loved it.
Or just the, the fact that Trump is in your goddamn face every day for 30, day. For 16 day. Years or whatever. Or for, it's ridiculous. Like that will be a yes. thing that will have been a shared scar that it'll be like, you know, it's our very light version, you know, Italians who live through World War II or like have to be like, oh gosh, you remember when we were all fascist? Do you remember that I've read a couple books about people, you know, just how weird it is to be like a child in that situation. And people are, oh yes, Mussolini, that, you know, but I guess that's just modernity that we get these pale plastic versions of, not that I'm saying, oh gosh, I wish we had something as horrible as Mussolini in our past, but you know, this is bad enough.
I mean, what is shared? Sports, I guess, is shared. That has to be, I mean, we all watch the Olympics together.
But we always watch the Olympics. I mean, I don't know if I've ever been nostalgic for, I can't even think of old Olympics. The little white girl who did
Mary Lou Retton.
Yeah, that chick. I've never been nostalgic for her. I mean, so I think the Olympics.
I remember her.
I don't know if that's a touch point, but I do think that us at our age, we oftentimes think back and think, oh man, the kids now will never have anything like what we had. But I think they will. It'll be different. It won't be the same, but they will have something that they will be able to kind of rally around and be like, yo, do you remember when this happened? Do you remember when, like, for example, talking about scars, the day after Trump was elected, people will remember that day, right?
Yes.
Or the day that George Floyd happened, for example, people will remember that day. So there will be things that people will rally around. Then, of course, there'll be good things, you know, oh, you know, whenever Taylor Swift and was at the Super Bowl. There'll be things to rally around. It'll be different.
It's going
to
look a lot different. Yeah.
It will be different, but, you know, it'll happen.
These are all really, like, specific, is the thing. When we talk about nostalgia for the 70s, the 80s, the 90s, like Mark brought up hippies or goths or, like, funk, disco culture.
K-pop.
Well, like, yeah, K-pop. K-pop might actually be a genuine example here because that is a case of...
I completely miss that. I miss K-pop. I don't understand it at all.
But it's a cultural phenomenon that is broad enough that's like it swept up a significant enough part of the population all at once that, yeah, maybe it's... And it comes with like cultural signifiers and whatever.
Anime might be something.
Mm-hmm. Anime might be... the rise of anime. That's a good point. That kind of thing. So, yeah, maybe arguing against myself here. But it is very different. It's not like... There are things like anime fashions and K-pop fashions, but it doesn't feel like subcultures now are not the same as they used to be. Maybe that's the big point.
So some of these just become like fetishes. I'm so nostalgic for ancient Greece. Like nobody's nostalgic. I wasn't there, but I know a lot of people who are really into ancient Greece and they just want to read more and more about ancient Greece. And so that's just
philosophers? Are they ancient philosophers? Is that
what yeah. Like, so there are two kinds of people who fit that description, like ancient philosophers and fascists. So hopefully the former.
You know, it's just an interest you get, like a secondary world that you get to live in. Like I have, you know, reading a bunch of Murakami books, like Japan in the 80s interests me in specifically. But, you know, because it was just a particularly vivid expression. And I'm sure there are many other things that, you know, if you read a particular book or fall in love with a particular author or a particular set of movies or whatever, then you're like, oh gosh, Hong Kong cinema of the 70s and like what it was like both in the making of those and hanging around those people and Bruce Lee and all that, you know, I could see it's almost like your private fantasy world, but it's, you know, it's a shared thing. It is a shared interest that you could be nostalgic about, or whatever the word you want to put for that, with other people. And those things will never go away. So today could be, wow, those early days of podcasting. That's crazy. Look how much stuff is before it all fell apart and nobody bothered to do it anymore.
The days of Serial. Man, that was a great time.
Mm-hmm. It's true. All those true crime podcasts.
It really was a great time when Serial, before there was this glut of true crime podcasts, the really, really good ones at the beginning. Man, that was a great time.
Before the precogs came around and stopped all crime forever, it was cool when we had those true crime podcasts.
Whoa, deep cut.
Oh, yeah. So, right. So maybe my take about there not being nostalgia fodder was completely wrong, and it was just wishful thinking. Because when people start getting nostalgic for the true crime boom, that's going to be a real bad day.
But I think you're right that, I think, Lawrence, you were kind of saying we don't get nostalgia for the Olympics because the Olympics is still happening. And if true crime, it seems like that font is never going to go.
Crime's going to crime.
You know, so, you know, when I turn on my TV, it's like the Samsung smart TV, and, you know, it'll play some live channel by default, and I'll try to set it to a news channel. So I feel like I'm connected with the world. I feel like there's, but half the time, no matter which, they're talking about some murder from 5 years ago. Like, I don't want to hear about that.
So then what explains like the resurgence, like these reboots of things like Frasier or Night Court or something? Like
old people explain that.
No. I know. That's what I think. But those shows are huge. If it was just old people, they wouldn't be as popular. They wouldn't be renewed every single season. Like, what's that about?
My sense is there are other remakes that don't do so well. Remakes and reboots that don't do so well and they get canned. My sense is that people who make TV shows, especially TV shows and movies to some extent too, are just very unsure currently about what is going to make a success. And they just view a reboot as a lower risk than an original property. And that's why we see so many. And yeah, I think it's honestly amazing that as many of them work as well as they do, because it seems like, I mean, the Frasier reboot in particular seemed like a recipe for disaster. And like, I don't love it, but it's clearly nowhere near as bad as it could have been.
What I think is going on is that, first, the reason why they're made is old people, right? Old people will watch it. It's a big enough demographic that it'll kind of continue. Now, the reason why they blow up is because the formula works. Like, the formula of Frasier works. The formula of
Battlestar Galactica.
Friends, it's a little different.
But that's a good example of, it was only initially people would watch it because there was the old thing. It was intelligent, right. But it's so eclipsed.
That's a great point, actually.
And there are probably other examples of that we could come up with, of like, oh, did you even know this thing that you liked also had a version of it from the 50s or whatever? Like, well, I mean, I guess I sort of knew that, but like, I don't care. I'm not going to watch the one from the 50s.
I was being flippant, but the more I think about it, Mark, that's a very good point, because that is an example of, okay, the formula works. These people just have not been exposed to the formula. Mm-hmm. If you can find a way to get them exposed to the formula, it's going to work, because people are going to gravitate towards those kinds of things. It's when you start messing with the formula that it kind of gets wonky. And that's when people try to do a fresh new take on this show and it doesn't work. But if you remain core to what the original show did well, new people, you'll find it just works with them. You know, and so I think that's what's happening. I think that it starts because of old people. It kind of continues because the formula just works.
I can totally see what you're saying, like with the reboot of Fresh Prince, for example. You know, like, I don't know how many people watched that show, but they were clearly aiming toward a younger demographic. They weren't getting the original, and they completely screwed with the formula. I still hear it was pretty good. I never watched it.
I watched it. I still watch it. It just came out this past week, the third season. But
the third season. Okay, so it's been renewed for 3 seasons.
Yeah, we're in the third season. But the thing is, with me, I watch it. I kind of don't like it. It's kind of soap opery. With my kids, they love it. It's speaking to them. And so it's playing with the, and that's a wonderful example of what we're talking about. It's playing with the fact that it is a descendant of that older show, but it's doing a whole different thing. And it lost me. It lost a lot of people in my generation. But the younger kids, they're the ones who's keeping it going. Like, if you look at that demographic of who's watching that show, they're all very young. So that's an example of something that kind of does something old to kind of get us interested, but it really kind of caught on with the younger generation. Younger black folks, I don't know if white folks are watching it. The younger black generation, they're definitely watching it.
So I watched the first version of Fresh Prince, but I wasn't interested in watching this latest version. Whereas Cobra Kai, so that show, I think, did a good job. And it's not a great show, but it pulled my generation, you know, Gen X in, but also our kids who are the same age as the teenagers on the show. And it did a great job of bringing in us for the nostalgia factor, bringing in a brand new audience that I think has been carrying that show, you know, and it has been pretty popular until I think this is the last season. So
yeah, they're breaking it up into two parts. That's another one that gets soap opera-ish for me. I don't know.
It's not a great show.
What else
show.
Are you going to do if you're going to have a show last, you know, if it's not a limited series? You're going to just bet like who's dating who and who's disappointing who. And
then
whatever.
They break up and then they're friends again. Eh, whatever.
What's interesting is that these are mostly kind of mediocre shows and they're reboots. They do the job, but they're mediocre. What's interesting to me is it's not like they're doing something cool and new and interesting and that's why people are sticking with them. Feels like people just stick with them because once you start a show, you may as well keep watching it.
Unless it just actively pisses you off and switches gears in a way that you don't. Yeah,
that is so true, Al. That is so true.
I'm quite good at turning off a TV show if I don't feel like it's, or unless you guys are making me watch it. And what the nostalgia factor does is it gives people a reason to what, like the Gen X parents have a reason to say, hey, kids, let's sit down and watch Cobra Kai together. And that is your routine. And that must save, I mean, this is just a horrible thought because you don't want to think about TV shows getting made this way. But that must save so many millions of dollars on marketing. Like, how expensive must it be just to get people to even think once about your show? And if you can call it Cobra Kai, a huge part of your job is done.
It's already
for you.
Done. That's such a great point.
That's a wonderful point.
Are you guys, and I know that we're hopefully going to talk about Beetlejuice when the second one comes out, but they're doing the same thing there too. You know, they're bringing in old cast members and then they've got, who's the star? What's her name? Ortega.
From Wednesday, yes.
But they're doing the same thing there that, you know, a lot of these other reboots have done too, is bring in somebody who's younger and already established and popular with the Gen Zers. And then also Winona Ryder. You can't go wrong.
But it might. We will see.
I was trying to think maybe to close out here, if there was kind of the point I started with is like, if we wanted to do a classic thing, well, we can always figure out some angle of connecting it to something that's right now, whether through its creator or a reboot or just its genre and its influences and things like that. Can we play this as a game and just see if we can throw out a few random things and see if we can connect? So try to think of a thing that is some old classic.
Like an old classic?
Yeah, legal courtroom thrillers, presumed innocent. Easy, easy.
Okay, so.
Law and Order, whatever, easy.
Should we have a Godfather episode? Okay, well, what about, you know, just the mafia stuff through, well, Sopranos, that's still an old show. What's happening right now? Okay, actually, there's that goddamn Sylvester Stallone show.
Tulsa King.
Tulsa King.
I actually love that show.
Yes.
We could use the foiled Trump assassination attempt to talk about, like, the Saint or the Manchurian Candidate.
Whoa! That's some British humor for you there.
So we're working
backwards. That's some British humor.
Oh my gosh.
No American would make that joke. Good Lord.
Sarah, do you have an old thing that you're like, I wanted us to do this, or it would be kind of funny for us to do this, but I can't think of a way, you know.
If you think of, like, we've got Wicked that's coming out, we could do an episode on witches or witchcraft or magic, you know, how that's been.
Actually not a bad idea.
That one we could do because that was like the OG let's retell the Disney story.
Right.
Also interesting retellings.
Yeah. Or just awesome musicals.
What was that Disney movie had Angelina Jolie? It was like a retelling of
That was of Snow White.
Maleficent.
Yes, Maleficent. Actually, that was pretty good.
I've actually never seen that. I should probably watch that. But we haven't seen any of those kind of things.
So like a Grimm's Fairy Tales kind of thing. Like it wouldn't be that hard to find something probably at any given time that resonates all the way back to make us read some original Grimm's Fairy Tales, which is like, you know, a popular culture thing for hundreds of years. So
that was their TV. That's how they got it.
Or all of the Jane Austen, we've been reimagining all of the Jane Austen books forever.
Oh, I mean, Bridgerton is a debt. We can get a direct line back to Jane Austen.
100%. Yeah.
I need to watch that show too.
Isn't there a current show that's kind of a big deal that about Jesus or something? I'm just thinking like the Bible, the original pop culture. I thought there was a show right now that about is actually
Jesus. About yes. Jesus.
There's something called The Chosen. I don't know if that's
what I'm thinking of.
Okay.
The Chosen TV series. Like, again, nothing that we would. Is it still on the air?
To be honest, isn't that in like his fifth or sixth season?
Like, yeah.
I do not know how you stretch out the story of Jesus for six seasons.
Oh, yeah, because it's famously a very dull life.
Like, the crucifixion is coming. It's like, how do you stretch this out?
Maybe it's like the prequel. Maybe it's all Jesus as a teen. We don't know. After he flipped over the table and before he shows up. What?
Yeah.
You have no idea. You have no idea what happened.
They're doing all the Gnostic Gospels in there in the mid-season.
And he's just wandering in the wilderness.
Jesus, the middle school years.
Puberty Jesus.
Yeah.
Hey.
Once I'm Googling this, you like
know,
it's.
I feel so uncomfortable because I'm not thinking about Jesus as like a preteen and being like in discovering sexuality. Let's just keep going. Let's keep moving.
Now I'm Googling 12 must watch Jesus movies and shows. There are 12 of them. Oh, okay. Anyway.
One for each disciple.
There's King of Kings and Passion.
Not including Judas.
I don't know what else there is.
I think we've kind of established it's probably doable. We could probably go all day with more old things of
sure.
You know, an Alfred Hitchcock episode or something. Well, people are still doing Hitchcock-ish things, right?
We're doing M. Night Shyamalan. That's basically a Hitchcock episode.
That is not, darn it. I completely disagree with you.
Sarah, that might be the worst take you've
ever. I cannot believe you said that. We need to end this now. Is going off the deep end.
Am I getting fired?
We are hitting the time where we were going to stop. Thanks, everybody, for hanging around with us for a season. There really are no plans, right? Nobody's quitting today, right?
No one's quitting.
Nope.
So it will be a mid-season dropout.
Yeah, it's true. I'm not going to in line here.
We enjoy you. We enjoy each other in a conversational sense. Thanks, everybody, for hanging out.
Thanks for clarifying, Mark.
Bye,
guys.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Pretty Much Pop is part of the Partially Examined Life podcast network. Get more Pretty Much Pop at prettymuchpop.com. Get bonus content for every episode at patreon.com/prettymuchpop.